a meeting with Jane Adams at 275 Major Street. Jane, I want to say thank you very much for offering to speak to us. As I've already told you, I'm on the board of directors of Harbor Village, a residents association, and we are gathering information. We want to speak to people who have been here for a very long time and learn the changes that they have experienced and witnessed. So we'll touch on many topics, and you'll share with me the changes that you've observed. So, of course, you'll talk about what was in the past and what you see now. Would you just tell me how long you've lived here, approximately what age you moved here, and what brought you into this neighborhood?
I moved here in 1979, and I had been living on Bernard, and my son went to Huron Street School, and we were looking for a smaller house, and at first my son went to
Lord Lansdowne?
No, community school. At college in Bathurst, the community school.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, anyway, so he went there for a little while, but then he went back to Huron Street. So we were looking for a small neighborly neighborhood close to a good primary school, and we came here.
And you've been here ever since. So your son was, so you were three of you living here at that time.
Yes.
What was the nature of the house at that time?
Very, very good question. It had been owned by a Portuguese family. Mm-hmm. In fact, two cousins had bought the house together, and two whole families lived here. So upstairs, there was a kitchen and a family of four or five, kitchen, living room, and then several people in each of like the two other rooms. And then on the ground floor, there was like the living room, bedroom, in the middle, and then kitchen, dining room, and then another bedroom with the bathroom in the basement. So I think at maximum there had been 11 people in those two families. And they, I think they were very hardworking people. And when then they moved out and they both were able to buy separate homes farther afield.
Well, since we're talking about what it was like then and the house, what was in the back garden? Do you remember?
I do remember. Pigeons, big pigeon coop for eating pigeons, and then a big dog run for a German shepherd.
So those pigeons were for the family. Do they sell them too?
I don't know. I
don't know. Okay.
There was a tiny little cement patio, very, very tiny, like maybe 6 foot by 6 foot. And then a big pigeon coop, and then the dog run.
So all these changes that I see, you've done those?
We tried to do the minimum number of changes. We did take down several walls, two walls in the living dining room, so that is now one big area. And in the back, we took down the wall between what was the kitchen dining room and the back area, which was a bedroom. So virtually the ground floor is now just basically two large rooms.
Were you living here while you did that?
Oh, pretty much. Pretty much.
When you think of this neighborhood, so you've been here since 79, mm-hmm. what are the largest or the most significant changes as you think of them?
I'll speak about the ethnicity.
Please do.
This is what I know of.
Excellent.
People, when I moved here, told me that pre-1900, there had been a very rich and important wave of Ukrainians, and that some of the trees in this neighborhood, specifically the Trees of Heaven, do you know that tree that I'm talking about? Well, that's what its name is. And that those were planted by the Ukrainians who came here before the wave of Jewish immigrants. So when I came in 79, there were no Ukrainians that I know of, but there were lots of elderly Jewish people. And next door, well, many houses had elderly Jewish people who had been here for 40 years or more. And they were very companionable with each other and with the rest of us. So that was my welcoming committee when I moved onto the block.
So you knew about the Ukrainians, but they were long gone.
The Jewish people told me about the Ukrainians and how they had lived here prior to their arrival and had planted those kinds of trees.
Okay, so and now we're on that topic. Who else was here besides the Jewish people in 79? I mean, the elderly Jewish people.
So I would say the Jewish population had moved out largely, except for the old parents. And it was largely Italian and Portuguese. And at that time, the houses were wonderfully colored. Everybody painted their house a wonderful color. And it was really a pretty street to move onto. Pretty, and it was very, very colorful. But some of the details were pretty rough. Like, everybody had a pipe fence. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was... like everybody's fence was made out of, like, plumbing supplies, and I guess a lot of the people who lived here were in construction, mm-hmm. and so they would bring home these pieces of pipe and make
fences. What were their front gardens, and compared to what we have now?
I would say every house involved a patch of grass, and then right up close to the foundation would be some houses, some plants. And there are two or three things that I want to mention in the course of the interview that I feel I personally helped initiate. And I was the first person on my block who dug up the whole front yard and just planted it to plants. And I could explain why I did that, but I think I won't go into that story. Anyway, I got a fair amount of comment from my neighbors as I was digging. Some people said, well, that's ridiculous. These are not flower gardens. These are lawns, and they should be kept as lawns.
Use a mower.
Especially the elderly Portuguese men had a lot of opinions on this because they were very proud of their gardens, but there was a certain way that they must be planted in order to look well in the rest of the neighborhood. And these are small yards, so it doesn't seem like a dramatic thing at all. But it was enough to cause comment. And in fact, some people felt sorry for me because they didn't think I would be able to fill up such a big space with plants. And a few times I came home and people had dug out plants from their garden to give me for my garden, like iris or things that they thought would help me.
Fill up your garden.
So that garden was one of the very nice early things that made me feel like I belonged on the street because of the controversy and the contributions that people gave me for this enterprising garden.
So you were somewhat of a pioneer in changing the form of the little front garden with the grass and maybe a tree in the middle.
That's right. So I feel good about that because that's quite a common thing now.
And what did you have behind, and what do you have now behind your home?
We just put in interlocking brick on the whole of the backyard because it's very, very tiny. Uh-huh. And there was the thought that maybe if I had a car, I might plant it there someday. But when we took down the pigeon coop and the dog run, we didn't plant it to garden. We didn't plant it to grass. We made a big garden, made a picnic table area, and the rest we covered with insel brick. And the hilarious part of taking down those two structures was that they were both just full of mice. There must have been hundreds of mice because, you know, like all the grains that the pigeons had been fed were like perfect mouse food. So every cat for miles around was there for the dismantling and then the eating of the mice. And it was just like a scramble out there. Now there are not so many cats, you know, just the cats that just roam around. There were a lot of cats in those days.
Did those mice make their way into the home?
Some of them did. Yeah. Some of them did come straight into the house.
So you had to find a way to... Of course you had.
It wasn't such a big problem.
Yeah.
We were able to get rid of them, but it was just like, it was this free-for-all, and there must have been a dozen cats just like tearing around, catching them all. So it was a very exciting day.
Oh my God, terrific story. we're talking about the houses now, so I'm going to stay with it for a while. When people gathered at that time, where were they gathering? Did you see people using back gardens, front porches? Do you have any comments about that?
There's some kind of law of physics in my mind between the porches and the front walks. So I think Major Street has the perfect proportions because I sit on my porch a lot, and people can call out and like converse from the sidewalk. You know, if it was much farther, they would maybe just wave or something, or much closer, and I might feel like I was sort of sitting in the middle of the street. But like Major Street has the perfect dimensions for people being able to sit on their porch, talk, chat, have a nice conversation.
Does that happen a fair amount? People using their front porches, or are you one of the few?
Maybe I'm one of the few now. Yeah. It used to be more common with the elderly Jews who lived here.
Yeah.
And they would visit. I had two elderly friends, and they would go every day twice to the JCC, Rose and Tilly. And they would come along the street. They were very tiny, and they would come arm in arm past my house, and I would call out. And I'd say, would you like some tea? And they'd say, maybe something a little stronger. So then they would come up and sit on the porch, and I would serve whatever I had going. And they would tell me all the stories about the people who lived on the street, and they would have been wonderful people, to interview.
So you're saying that the front porches were used more 30 years ago than they're being used now.
I would say that's my experience
because I moved into this neighborhood shortly after that, and we used the front porches a lot. But you're still using your front porch.
Yes, and we've had to have the porch rebuilt. And I made sure that it was big enough to take two chairs. And then often people will come.
Yeah.
They'll come and stand around or talk or even sit on the steps. But in the summertime, it's wonderful. I just love it.
Yeah. Well, when I moved into the neighborhood, I remember my Portuguese and Italian neighbors. Mm-hmm. And I was one of them. But sitting outside until 12 at night, 1 in the morning, very friendly sidewalk living.
That's
as
right.
Jane Jacobs would have called it.
Yes, we have some of that for sure. If you want it.
Yeah.
If you want it, you can have it.
So you've talked about the waves of immigration. Can you talk a little bit as part of that about the class structure as it was then, 30 something years ago, and as it is now? Any comments about that?
Now I think that most of the people who live on this block are like cultural workers, TV, journalism, dancers, writers, artists. A lot of people in the law and medicine and academics, naturally, because we're so close to the U of T. And interestingly, a lot of single women in the last, say, 15 years.
Of what ages? What are you talking about?
I'm talking about women whose children have flown the coop, and maybe they've flown the coop too.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've bought a home.
So they're in their 50s, 60s?
I would say so. I would say, you know, 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
The houses are small, and they're very companionable size.
Yeah.
You don't feel like you're horribly overhoused, but they're bigger than a condo or an apartment. And that's a new thing.
So these single women.
Middle-aged women, yeah.
Right.
I think I'll say a word about the use of the houses. And this was a point I'd made in my email, that when I came here, they must have been a dozen boarding houses in this one block. And the tenants all seemed to be sort of forlorn-looking, middle-aged white men. And I would say some of them had unhappy lives or, you know, workplace injuries or maybe an addiction of something or other. But they were certainly harmless, but they were very frequent. They were a common tenant on this street. And then we had a very, very bad fire, a fire that was set by the concierge about 4 doors down. And she died in the fire, and some people were trapped. The doors were locked, some people were trapped, but they got out. And after that, the city came in and went to every door to find out who was running illegal boarding houses. And after that, several of them closed, and then they just seemed to kind of go out of favor as the value of the properties went up, and some of those places became single-family homes or triplexes. People would just have them divided into triplexes. So, I often think when I see, unhappy-looking guys on the street, I think, a lot of those people wouldn't have had many places to go. Shelters and affordable housing is a very rare commodity in the city. So, we kind of squeezed out some very needy people.
Well, the psychiatric institutions also squeezed them out.
Yes,
there was a period when they housed a lot of those people, and they pushed them out.
That's absolutely true. And that convergence, that those two elements converged at about the same time.
You have notes, so if you want to just move along with those, I'm really fine with that.
No, I love your questions because it's making me think of some.
Okay, what about languages? What languages did you hear then? Because of what you're saying now, I'm thinking there's a lot of English.
Yes. Okay. Oh, yes. Now I would say it's very, very predominantly English now, but it was Yiddish, Portuguese, Italian, and then mostly English. And now I think in the last couple of years, almost everybody who's bought a house has been Chinese.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I've noticed that. Of course, there's always students live on the school, on the street. Uh-huh. Whether they rent a room or there's two or three houses that I would say, like we call them student houses. Mm-hmm. And exactly the setup, I don't know, but they cater to student population. And some of the houses that have been triplexed, they seem to attract graduate students. Couples who are graduates, they have a bit more money. They don't have to just rent a room. They can rent
a small
like
space.
a decent apartment.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the questions you have here is about the renovations, mm-hmm. and I mentioned the triplexes, and I mentioned also the colored houses. And now most of them have been, blasted or in some ways clean. So it's a very brick looking street. But the funny thing about many of these houses is that they're not brick houses. They're just brick facade. And can I turn this off for a second? The thing about these houses, a lot of them are not brick houses. They're brick facade. They're wood houses with this one little layer of brick along the front. And there was a house just south of Sussex. This was quite a few years ago. But some men were pulling off the front porch to replace it with a new one, and the whole facade fell in a heap, just this big pile of bricks in the front yard. And we all gathered round to admire it and say, sort of there for the grace of God, go high, because any one of our houses could just sort of fall off, or the face could fall off. But anyway, that's just a little story about that. I wanted to mention about schools. You were asking about
please.
Education.
Yeah, yeah.
And right now, I'm going full-time to the adult art program at Central Tech in the Art Center. And that is like one of Canada's little-known secrets. There's nothing like it in the rest of Canada, that art center. You know the program I'm talking about.
I've taken stained glass classes there. Yeah.
Well, that's actually continuing ed. Mm-hmm. Like you can go as an adult student into the high school program for 3 years, and it's a very intense, very, very sophisticated art school for $400 a year. And I can think of half a dozen people who have gone there from our immediate neighborhood within the last few years. So I would say over the last 50 years, which is as long as that art center has been around, I bet there have been hundreds of people from this neighborhood who've been able to get an exceptional art education at Central Tech.
Well, I know Gail went, and Allison is going now.
Yes, Allison.
Yes.
That's right. She's
and
in my
Gail
class.
Gail was there a couple of years ago.
Gail who?
Singer.
Yes, yes. She's another Winnipeg girl.
Uh-huh.
I know her from Winnipeg. Yeah, so that's a very big deal to me.
Any other comments about the schools as they were, as they are now? Public schools, Hebrew schools, anything that's happened in your 30-something years there?
No, I didn't have very much to say about that.
Yeah. Okay.
My son went to Huron.
Right.
And then he went to Jarvis. I forget what the middle school was called. But anyway, I wanted to say about the U of T that for the years when my son was going to university, and you know, money was really scarce, I, as a single parent, I was very grateful to have U of T there where he could go and get an education, but also he could live at home.
Yeah.
So that was the biggest thing. He got a good education that I could afford.
Do you have any comments now that we're talking about U of T and how grateful you are that it's close, the impact of the university on our neighborhood?
Well, the skating rink was just glorious. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, the skating rink. For years, I went there and skated with my
friends.
Are they
not making ice them anymore?
I don't think it's functioning now, but when it did, it was wonderful. In the evening, you go, they play music, you could skate with your friends. My son went there, like, every day, and he taught a few of the younger children in the neighborhood how to skate, you know, on that rink. So it was a wonderful facility.
Yes. And so when would your son have been going? 20 years ago?
Well, he's 42 now, so yeah. I would say 25 and 30. So that 10-year period.
So that's
the rink a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And they're talking about, I won't say anything now about that. But the JCC is just fantastic. I belong for 30 years. On and off, met so many friends, had such a good time, feel healthy and fit. It is really, in many ways, the heart and soul of the community.
And it's a community center. It's a community center more than a recreation.
It is.
More than a fitness center.
No, and it makes everybody feel welcome. So I am actually Scottish and Irish background. And I've met enough Scottish women there that every Robbie Burns Day we have haggis here.
And you met them at the JCC.
Yeah, these are all my swimming buddies from the JCC. So, you know, whatever your, you know, your age or your interests or your ethnicity, you know, you will be very welcome and comfortable there.
I'm having dinner tonight at the JCC. There are 20 of us meeting at a restaurant on Bloor. Yeah.
So the friends that you've...
We all go at 7:15 in the morning. This is just the early morning group. Mm-hmm. So I agree. I mean, it's been that in my life, too.
I met wonderful friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we encourage each other in our lives in a unique kind of way, in that we're all there for health, fitness, and well-being. So we encourage each other at a sort of a very basic life force level. We're not professional friends exactly. We want to live a good life.
Do you want to talk about Major Street per se, or should we stay with the whole Harbord Village for what's significant to you?
Well, I only have a couple more things that I was interested in mentioning.
Oh, please go ahead.
And one is the Transat Club,
okay,
which is a very ugly building on Brunswick. And I rarely, if ever, hear anybody in this neighborhood talking about it. Like, oh, I had a fun time at the Transat. Never. Never. But I have gone there hundreds and hundreds of times. It was, you know, for the last 25 years of my life, has been like really a center of folk music. And I love folk music. And for years I went at least once a week, sometimes twice a week. I had my 50th birthday party there. I learned how to do Irish dancing. I met Chris there. There's like a whole underground sort of dancing thing in Toronto. And he was teaching French Canadian step dancing, not professionally,
Chris
but just for fun.
That.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
He's a wonderful dancer. And he was teaching that at the Transat, and I was there learning Irish dancing. And then there were a whole bunch of people doing like that English Morris dancing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I stepped into his class and started learning French Canadian step dancing, and then romance ensued. So it means a lot to me, and we still go a lot. And we got very involved in that Irish music scene. And in fact, this weekend, there is a big Irish music festival at the Transac, and we're billeting some people from Ireland, and we're having workshops here right in our living room, people teaching each other how to play Irish musical instruments. So the Transac has been fantastic for me.
I've gone to the Transac around Christmas time when they have about 5 weekends of different artisans selling their wares at Christmas time.
Yes.
And have a few quite charming things hanging in my home that I've bought there. So that's the only time I've used it. Yeah.
Well, it's been a transitional thing. I'm going to mention it in case nobody else has, but it was the Transac means Toronto, T for Toronto, and then ANZAC, which means Australia and New Zealand Club. So it's the Toronto, Australia and New Zealand Club. So in the days, like in the 20s and 30s, when Toronto was full of, you know, very distinguishable ethnic communities, many of them did have social club, like the Portuguese club and the Austrian club, and this was the Australian-New Zealand social club. So it was very dominated by Australians and New Zealanders, and I would say they were very exclusive in the use of that building. They really didn't welcome other people.
Mm-hmm.
And then gradually, as they dispersed and became more integrated, far fewer Australians and New Zealanders went there. So then the dominant culture there became the folk music community, which was much more like Europeans, British, English, Irish, people who loved singing folk music. And that's how I first started to go there. And that still is part of the culture of the Transac Club. But now I would say it's more musicians playing like new music, that doesn't personally interest me, mm-hmm. like more contemporary youth-oriented music. So I don't go as much. And I don't think there's any New Zealanders or Australians involved
and
at all
dancing,
anymore.
Is that still being done or not as much? The dancing that used to
Not the dancing that I was involved
so even
in.
The Transac Club has gone through major changes.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Well, you're the first one who explained what Transac stands for, mm-hmm. so that's very mm-hmm. interesting for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Okay. And I wanted to tell about something about our block, and this was something that I started 11 years ago, and it's our annual street party.
Just remind us what street you're talking about.
Okay, I'm talking about the north block of Major Street, so that's the block between Sussex and Bloor on Major Street. So once a year, the first week of December, everybody on the block is invited, and we rotate houses, so every year it's a different house. Somebody volunteers to be the host, and we have a really refined process for everybody comes and does the same thing, so the hosts don't have to do very much work, and we invariably get over 60 people in the course of like a cocktail party, you know, 4 to 8 or something like that, and it's wonderful. People love it.
So people bring some kind of snack.
Yes,
food?
yes. It's definitely potluck. And they bring wine, and the food is fantastic, and people come and they stay because, and over the years, it's gotten more and more friendly, sort of intimate, as people get, they see each other on the street, they have more to talk about, you know, there's always more to say.
People take great pride in this street. I interviewed a person farther south who's mm-hmm. been here his entire life. He left for about 15 years or so. But he's been here the rest of his 82 years. And he loves this neighborhood, mm-hmm. and people are very kind to him. And mm-hmm. He's substantially farther
south.
Yes,
that's right. Yeah. And something that's happened in the last couple of years is that two people, Helen Breslauer and Gwyneth Pierce Murdoch, have set up like a Google Yahoo group. And I think there's 50 people on that group. So if somebody wants information or wants to invite people to something or... You know, the other day I wanted to know, is there a B&B in this neighborhood for some relatives who are visiting? So I just sent out on the...
So Google. This is for your block?
Just
what is
our
this?
Block.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of people. And you get instant response. I heard immediately of several
So it's another feeling of community. This is our
Yes, and we've had a lot of interesting things to communicate. Two very tragic. Somebody died in our neighborhood, a few weeks ago, and so that was it. We were informed about that, and now we're being informed about a memorial service, and it's just great because we're all kind of up to date on what's what. And then if somebody moves in, often a neighbor will say, I want to tell you about the new neighbors I have. It's William and Wendy and their son Ian, and blah blah blah. So it's a very, very nice, very nice effort.
Yeah, so much of the city has nothing mm-hmm. similar to this.
Nope.
Yeah.
And these things build on each other. So once you're talking to each other and once you're sort of feeling like more companionable, other things come out. So about 2 or 3 months ago, this was after the Christmas party or the December party, I thought, I love soup. And so I thought, it's kind of a lonely thing because so many of us there's just 2 or 3 people per house. I said, why don't we have a soup collective? So I put out on the email, the Yahoo group, does anybody want to be part of a soup collective? So 10 people said they would. So now we have 2 groups of 5 that once every 5 weeks, you make, make 4 cups of soup for 5 other families. And they have been delicious. They've been fantastic. So, we're into we're going through like our second round now. And then we're having a party on the 14th to discuss our soups. And
so this is all still this one block of Major Street.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Now, these things, they might peter out or whatever, and it doesn't really matter. It's not a business, any of these things. It's just...
It's
to
not
the extent
carved in
that
stone,
people know.
And it'll
people,
have its own life.
That's right.
Yeah.
So sometimes if I think nobody's volunteered for the party in December, I think, well, maybe that's over. But somebody always says, I want to do the party this year. Or where's the party happening this year on the street? They say, well, where are we going to get together? And then, we've had it. Somebody has volunteered every year. But it's getting almost too big. Like, it would be hard for me to have it again, because I can't easily get 60 more people.
Yeah, that's a lot of people in these homes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and they'd stand. Yeah, but it's... Yeah, I agree, yeah.
Now, Anna... Yeah, so that's all I'll say about that. Those were the points that I wanted to make. Was there anything else in your list of questions that...
Perhaps you can talk about... traffic, how traffic moves and has moved from the time you've moved in.
I don't have anything much to say about that.
Renovations?
Oh, I did have a word to say about that. And I think there's a category of things like the use of the homes, and there was the boarding house issue and how there's an increasing number of triplexes as these houses get sort of subdivided. So that's much more common than a boarding house now. But when the Portuguese lived in these houses, they had an astonishing way of using the space. And that was like the ground floor was extremely formal. And the front room was almost like a shrine. It would have all religious icons and photographs and was not to be sat on. Lovely furniture, but not to be used.
Off limits for daily use. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then a very nicely decorated dining room, and then a kitchen, which was not really used very much either. And then the whole of the family's activities took place in the cantina in the basement. And I really think somebody should record this, because there's a woman named Maria Mercedes, and she often asks me in to see her house. And it is, it's kind of astonishing.
So hers is in that... She still lives that
exactly,
way.
Exactly, but very few people. That's all gone now, except for maybe a handful of people on the street. But somebody should go in and photograph that, especially on a Catholic religious holiday, because that whole front room is full of flowers. Have you seen this? Have you ever gone into one?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. And that is an amazing use of the space, because now it's changed. And most people have done what I've done and opened it up, and it's all like every space is sort of for fair game for everybody doing everything. And we all live on the ground floor and put our feet up on the coffee table, and nobody goes in the basement. It's just like storage. But also the basements here were mostly built like after the long after the houses were built. So a lot of the basements were dug out after the houses were built. So the basements tend to be quite shallow.
They're not for tall people.
Not for tall people. There has to be a good word for that.
Yeah.
Very little height.
Yeah. So I think, in fact, you can't really rent it out, a lot of them, because there's no exit from there, and they're too short. They're not really legal for serious living or whatever.
So why exactly the Portuguese do that? I don't exactly know. But I've been down in the cantinas for a coffee or a drink or a tea, and they're very, very cozy, and it's like a little home in miniature. Like there's the TV and there's a sofa and there's a little table.
And that's the livable part of the house. The other is the...
It's more formal, And maybe on important holidays, they would use the upstairs dining room and the kitchen. But even the kitchen, which has the newest in appliances, has like photographs and vases of flowers and...
On the stove.
Like knickknacks. Yeah, on the stove and the countertops.
Yeah.
Because it's not in daily use.
Yeah.
You know, sort of tchotchkes.
Yeah.
So I kind of love that. There's something really lovely about that. It sort of shows some... I think they're really proud of how beautiful...
Well, and it's cultural. It's specific to that population and probably brought it over from Europe. I would think, good chance.
Mm-hmm. And maybe it's warmer. Maybe it's an economy thing. Like you don't want to heat a great big house all day and night. Maybe it's being underground is more economical and more cozy. I don't know. But that's something that should be appreciated.
Well, it's an observation of yours, and it's something that changes. Some of those people are not changing. They're keeping it that way, but their children, I'm sure, are living quite differently. Yeah, and the people who are buying their homes will do it differently.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Any changes in the heating systems, like when you bought this house and what you have now, any comments on that?
Well, not very much.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was... Oh, well, we only filled in the coal scuttle. The coal scuttle was down there. We only filled that in last year when we had the bathroom built in right here. But there was still that sort of pit where the coal would have been thrown down into the basement.
So that was from...
But that was
when the house
after
was,
my time.
Now, you haven't been... You weren't here 50 years ago, but in the 30-something years you've been here, can you comment on the stores, on Harvard, on Bloor, on College? Any changes that are remarkable, notable?
Well, there was it was big Hungarian population on the Bloor Street. There weren't very many Hungarians living on the street on these streets that I know of, but undoubtedly they did. But I think that they had all moved to greener pastures. But there are still lots of Hungarian restaurants and stores.
I love that. Yeah.
And then I would say about 20 years ago, we got kind of a little rash of fairly high-end stores, like sort of gourmet food stores and like gift shops and quite nice things. And now I would say the dominant theme on Bloor Street is cheap food, cheap booze, just like cheap stuff, very, very student-oriented food and drink. And then I would say also that the Korean and Asian influence. I mean, there's more sushi restaurants between Spadina and Bathurst than you can shake a stick at. And then increasingly a number of Korean restaurants moving in an easterly direction. So, for example, on the corner of Palmerston and Bloor, there was a huge McDonald's.
Yeah.
And now it's a huge Korean restaurant. Fabulous food. We've been there a couple of times.
Oh,
but I think that's a... That in itself is an interesting commentary.
Yeah, because they used to be around, more like around Manning.
That's right.
And now, as you say, it's coming towards Bathurst.
Yeah, and replacing a McDonald's is pretty cool. So I think that the state of the sort of businesses on Bloor is a really, it's very low. I think that the rents went zooming up about 10 years ago. I think they got really, really greedy. And so anybody who was trying to offer some sort of a special, sort of specialty product, they just couldn't afford it, and they all went out of business and just left room for the wings.
And that can share, sell a lot of them.
And coffee shops, you know, the Starbucks, etc.
I make the same assumptions as you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Kensington Market, is that something that you have any comments? Not so that's not influencing you. Talk about, please, the livability, the security in this neighborhood, mm-hmm. as it was when you moved in and as it is now 34 years later, 33 years later.
Well, there have been these many changes that we've discussed, but it's always had a very friendly feeling. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Harbor Village Residents Association is a very important part of who we are and why it's as good as it is. They're a very, very active organization, mm-hmm. and they should be given a tremendous amount of credit.
It is a very lively, passionate group of individuals and group. I think that, I mean, the other topics that I have here wouldn't have been here at that time. The Spadina Expressway and Rochdale, mm-hmm. end of World War II. No, you were.
No.
You were to miss
I do remember Rochdale. But one of the things that is a change is how few children there are on the street. And when I see those old photographs, of the turn of the century, do you know the pictures I would be referring to?
Mm-hmm.
William James photographs. There's all these rafts of children playing and making carts and wagons and playing on the street, and very, very few children now.
Yeah, my block seems to be increasing in that, but I think, you know, a lot of people like you and me, like mm-hmm. you and I, like living mm-hmm. in this neighborhood, mm-hmm. and our children are not in the neighborhood and mm-hmm. with their children.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the families that do have children, the children often go to school somewhere in some other part of the city. Not sure why.
And they go to daycare and they don't play on the street as much.
Yeah. No, if you see a child just strolling along the street, I stop and I look around to see who's with that child. Well, that wasn't the case when my son went to school. You know, he would walk to school every day by himself or possibly with a friend. And there were kids. There were kids a lot.
Yeah, those are changes that have occurred.
Mm-hmm. People having smaller families and then just fewer people per house. Like when I referred to the 11 people who lived in this house, I mean, I'm sure most of them were kids.
That's right. So now there are two of you.
That's only two people and two animals. That's right.
So before I turn the tape off, mm-hmm. any thoughts, anything that we haven't talked about that had interested you that you thought you might want to talk about? Or have you?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh, maybe I do. I think I talked about it already. Okay. I've loved having Trinity St. Paul at the corner of my street. Over the years, I've had many, many different associations with it, even though I'm not a member of the congregation. But for a long time, there was Offices of Grindstone Island, which was like a socialist political camp near Ottawa. And I was involved with them. And I've been to lots and lots of fundraisers and weddings and political events in the sanctuary, and I love it because it forms a fantastic sound barrier between my house and Bloor's. So, so when I'm sitting out in the backyard in the summer, it's just like, it's as peaceful as the countryside. You don't hear a peep. And it's very beautiful.
Yeah, it's hard to believe we're in the center of the city.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I love it that they do a soup kitchen and that they do, they have a center for, let me see, it's called Peace, Justice, and the Arts, I think it's called. So they really try to encourage arts in the church, and they have a connection with Central Technical School in that regard. So it has really tried very hard to be outreach to the community, but also to elements of the whole city who are, you know, terribly, terribly poor. Mm-hmm. And they're a very gay-friendly, Native people-friendly center. So we're blessed. And I think that, like many, many churches, they're in difficult economic times. And so that makes them even more sort of precious in a way, because you worry about what would happen if they can't continue to function in that way. A lot of people would be losers.
I wonder if they have any serious fundraising that happens. I don't know.
I'm sure they try to do fundraising in every way they can, but you know what? The congregation is a lot older, mm-hmm. and sparser. That's a very common, common problem.
Done.
But it is another treasure. We have so many treasures in our neighborhood, and that's one of them.